And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On today's show, we'll use every watery pun at our disposal in a chat about the new Sundance Channel mystery miniseries, Top of the Lake, from its shipping containers to its formidable lead actresses. Then we'll return to a favorite topic, pop culture punching bags. They take a beating, but we're ready to give them a little love. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. We have a special lineup this week. But first of all, Glenn Weldon, you I know.
Yeah.
What do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
We are also joined this week by our producer, Jess Gittner. Jess Gittner, what do you do at NPR when you are not producing Pop Culture Happy Hour?
I'm a producer at Morning Edition.
And this week we are introducing a new NPR person on the mic. We have with us from NPR Books, Petra Mayer.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Petra, what do you do at NPR Books?
I'm an editor on the books team. I specialize in genre fiction and general nerdery, and I also run a lot of our social media presence. It's usually me being a dork on Twitter.
Nice. And you also, you used to work on Weekend All Things Considered. You come from radio.
I did. For 10 years, I was a producer and director on Weekend All Things Considered. I still get incredibly excited about witty dead rolls.
Wonderful.
My fingers twitch for the sliders on the board.
And I bet that even more than me, I told someone recently that one of the things I've noticed about myself since I came to work here is that if I'm listening to the radio, like in the car, and there's dead air, I panic completely.
Oh, yeah.
On behalf of whoever it is. It doesn't have to be us. It can be anyone. I just freak out.
I still have an exaggerated startle reflex when anything like that happens. I go, oh, my God, that's my fault.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can I ask a favor, given the current makeup of the Pop Culture Happy Hour team? If I were to say, hello, angels, would you guys indulge me in saying, hiya, Charlie?
I would.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Hello, angels.
Hiya, Charlie.
Oh, that's sweet.
Oh, Glenn feels better. Well, I think this might be the only time we've ever had three ladies and a dude.
Should we strike the pose? It's kind of hard around this table.
Yeah, we'd have to have our guns.
I'm making an air gun at Glenn right now.
Yeah, you are.
Speaking of guns and startle reflexes, our first topic this week is the Sundance Channel series Top of the Lake. Now, this is one of these, it flew under my radar a little bit, partly because I did not go to press tour in January, but here it was, all of a sudden, Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men and Holly Hunter, and directed and written by Jane Campion, who is not prolific, but very good at what she does. Mm-hmm. And we have all watched some Top of the Lake. Glenn, why don't you kick us off? What do you think of this little series? Now, we should say they've aired, as of this discussion, 3 hours out of 7 installments. I'm not sure if it's 7 installments or 7 hours, but
I am in. I love this series.
Yeah.
You know, it has some antecedents, some tonal and thematic antecedents.
Sure.
One of the things that isn't getting talked about much, but I see it, is the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Trouble with Harry. In its lighter moments, and that's one of the things I admire about this show, is its way to modulate its tone.
Mm-hmm.
In its lighter moments, it has that sort of quirky lightness. But really, the two things that people are talking about a lot are Twin Peaks, of course, and The Killing as its antecedents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Twin Peaks echoes are a lot. And
yeah.
They are quite deliberate, you know, finding a body by the side of the water. And it's really, if you line it up exactly, like the end of the third episode of Twin Peaks ended with Dale Cooper jumping out of bed and saying, I know who killed Laura Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the third episode of Top of the Lake ended with Elizabeth Moss saying, I know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the end of the episode. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of really deliberate things. We've talked about Twin Peaks before in the show. I had the Diary of Laura Palmer. I was all over it. I loved it.
Yeah.
And what I admired about that show is something I admire about this show, which is its approach, its tone, its mood. You know, I get the sense the characters exist beyond the time that we're looking at them.
Sure.
And it's so filled with mystery that doesn't have anything to do with the plot for me. It has to do with the mood, the cinematography,
right.
The look of it, the feel of it, really. Because I remember when Twin Peaks was huge, the kind of frenzy it kicked up was, you know, the Time magazine did what we would now call an infographic, showing all the connections between the characters and who killed Laura Palmer.
Right.
And it was like you're asking the question like it's Dallas. This show
right.
isn't Dallas.
Right. No,
this
no,
isn't,
right.
This isn't about the simple plot-driven, like, we're not going to find out it's Kristen at the end of this,
right.
this thing.
No, right.
What it's erasing are these issues of mood. So I didn't care so much about who killed Laura Palmer. I wanted to spend time in this town.
Mm-hmm.
When The Killing came along, it was exactly the opposite for me. I didn't care about these characters. It all felt very monochromatic, one note, one emotional note mm-hmm. over and over again. And the plot was what I wanted to find out. And I would follow the plot down holes when, if you remember that one episode where they went to this huge backstory about the two detectives. Mm-hmm. This is not why I'm tuning into your show.
Right.
So with this series, I'm back into that feeling of wanting to spend time in this incredibly gorgeous place with these incredibly weird people. I just really love the little grace notes, like the character Anita, who has this habit of repeating the last thing that everybody says. Mm-hmm. Or that one character who, when he is on a drug trip, wants to know what's happening now, not before, mm-hmm. not after. That's a really nice, really nice touch. And also, I really like the character of Bunny. She takes a very active role in addressing her sexual frustration. So all these things are making it a show that I really, really dig.
Now, we should say, before we continue, that the story that you're talking about, the plot that you're talking about, involves, at least at the beginning, a young girl essentially walks into a lake up to her chest, and they see her, and they're trying to figure out what's wrong, and why did she do this, and was she trying to kill herself? Was something else happening? Eventually, there's a young woman police officer, that's who Elizabeth Moss plays, who's brought in to investigate, and also at the same time, there is sort of, for no particular connected reason, there is also this commune of women that has taken up residence in this town in a bunch of shipping containers, led by the sort of, their kind of cult leader, I want to say, who is this, the woman played by Holly Hunter. So that's sort of where we are story-wise. Now, Glenn is an unqualified in. Petra, where are you on this show so far?
Well, I watched it.
Yeah.
And I watched it with a very witty friend of mine, and I think she said something that summed it up for me. She said, the great thing about this show is that it's Jane Campion. The terrible thing about this show is that it's Jane Campion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess I'm coming at it from a slightly different set of perspectives and desires. It plays into something that I've been thinking a lot about in terms of genre entertainment and how it can be done well. You know, I come from the book side of things, and what we're seeing a lot in books now is a sort of blurring of the boundaries between literary and genre, which is fabulous. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Great. Mm-hmm. More, please. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do that and do it satisfyingly, I feel like there's a compact that genre entertainment makes with the audience, that mm-hmm. there will be certain rules respected, that there will be a journey.
You'll hit signposts along the way.
Right, and, mm-hmm. and that there will be some kind of quest narrative and some kind of catharsis or closure at the end, whether or not it's a satisfying one. It doesn't have to be a happy ending, but I sort of like to think of it as the difference between human life and narrative, mm-hmm. in that human lives don't have narrative. Mm-hmm. They're very ambiguous. That's often reflected in more literary novels. And in genre fiction, you want the quest, you want the signposts, you want the catharsis, you mm-hmm. want the closure. And I can just see that that's not going to happen with this show, and it's going to drive me absolutely batty, because that's what I want from genre entertainment. And if you are going to try to attempt it, then you need to respect the rules. And I have to say, I think Jane Campion has tried this before and not done it too well with In the Cut, which mm-hmm. tried to be a very sort of noir erotic thriller and made me want to kill myself.
So what you're feeling like is that although it has sort of literary stylish aspirations, it's still at its heart a mystery for you. And you're feeling like the mystery aspects are not going to be served.
It takes me out of the scene. I don't want to be sitting there going, no real police officer would do that. What the hell are you doing? Get out of his house.
Yeah. You know, I can see that.
I know that's my inner nerd. It's my rules lawyer. But
sure,
it bugs me.
Sure.
Not given.
All right, Jess Gittner, how about you?
All right, so I'm coming from a place where I have not seen The Piano, I have not mm-hmm. seen Twin Peaks, and I have not seen The Killing.
All right.
So everything, you know, sort of written about this show has so far been meaningless to me.
Good then.
3 episodes in, I do like it, and I will continue to watch it because I want to know what happened. But episode 1 and 2, I felt like I was sort of meandering through this world, albeit like a beautiful, scenic New Zealand. But I did feel like I needed an infographic. I'm like Googling these characters who, like, in some ways it's an asset that they can drop these tiny little bits of information mm-hmm. like off the cuff and then never revisit that until like 2.5 hours into the series. I felt that way about the character Sarge, who
Neckbeard.
Yeah. Tragic neckbeard.
7 minutes in heaven guy.
Yeah. But I did feel like I needed plot a little bit more. So I Googled the hell out of the show.
Yeah.
I want to find out what happened to this girl. And three episodes in, I'm getting a lot more out of the character development. For instance, Matt Mitchum, who mm-hmm. is the main, I don't want to call him a villain.
Yeah.
He's really changed in three episodes. He was just a terrible person, mm-hmm. first and second episode involving the killing of animals.
Yeah.
And in the third episode, he showed a little bit more of a vulnerable side, and that was really surprising.
Yeah.
It came out of nowhere.
And now he seems to be a guy with many problems.
There was some character yeah. whiplash there for me, I think.
Yeah, there was, so to speak. And I think for me, you know, what I said about this show shortly after I finished watching the third episode is there are a lot of things in this show, all of which I think are interesting. It's not entirely clear what they all have to do with each other. And my pal Scott Tobias had said to me, you know, I think I would take issue with the idea that it's not clear what they have to do with each other. You know, not in a combative way, but just sort of saying like that he does see that. And I had already read a recap that he had written of the show in which he made the point that that third episode had certain themes about self-abuse and self-loathing and things like that. I think that's all true. I think thematically you can figure out how to tie it all together. What I'm talking about is the disorientation of feeling like, so we're in this place, and as I said when I was setting up the story, kind of just because in this town there happens to be this commune of women who come from various bad situations who don't have any obvious connection to the plot at first, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I completely understand what Petra is saying, which is that as a mystery, if you're trying to tell an economical mystery, it becomes concerning when you're feeling like the world is going out, out, out. Like, oh, here's the commune, and here's also her mother, and here's also the relationship with the friend. And it's not clear that all these... And then they bring in this... In this third episode, there is this very strange encounter between Matt Mitchum and one of the women from this commune that sort of is all over the place, and mm-hmm. that's making you think, like, so is now this a whole different whole story? And it's seven... You know, if it's going to be a seven-piece story, then you don't have all the time in the world to mess around with an infinite amount of stuff. So I'm definitely sympathetic to the concern that, like, boy, they're putting a lot of pieces on the board, and I like all the pieces.
Right.
But it's that nagging fear of, like, you are not going to tie this up in a way that's going to satisfy me, are you?
Well, one thing you can certainly say about Campion is that she has a heavy hand in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you watch The Piano again, you'll see that it reads more like a treatise than a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we have a masculine principal in the form of Matt and a feminine principal in the form of Holly Hunter, and they're going to mm-hmm. come into some kind of conflict over it. It's all going to work on a thematic level, most likely. But I am in on this because, to me, this hits a sweet spot that very few pieces of popular culture hit, which is I don't know where this is going, but I have every confidence
yeah.
that the creators do. Now, I might
yeah.
be disappointed. I very likely will. But let me tell you, let's talk a little bit about that drug trip, which has been getting some sort of dings online. I loved it. For this reason, we don't see that drug trip through the eyes of the characters. Like, Breaking Bad does this all the time, where it tries to do all kinds of camera tricks and it tries to do all kinds of things
right.
with color to capture the feeling of a drug trip. Instead, we see some realistically fleshy 55-year-old actors mm-hmm. flopping around on the heather like a couple of landed sea bass, sexually assaulting a tree trunk in their ratty underwear. I mean, this is it. This is what I'm saying. This should be shown in seventh grade health classes because this is your brain on drugs, kids.
Yeah.
This is forget the skillet and the egg. This is your brain on drugs. So I just really like those choices. I like seeing the actress Genevieve Lemon, who plays Bunny, who was actually in Jane Campion's first film, a really weird but beautiful film called Sweetie. It's great to see her again. And, you know, as a nerd, I like knowing that every actor I'm seeing in the background at one point played an elf. Because the Lord of the Rings is to New Zealand actors as Law and Order is to New York actors.
Nice. It's like British actor bingo in Doctor Who.
Exactly. So again, I understand where you guys are saying, but like it's like that scene at the end of Stardust Memories where the aliens come down and Woody Allen asks them, you know, what's the meaning of life, and they're like, these are the wrong questions. That's just the way I feel.
Well,
I feel like
yeah.
this is connecting for me in a not plot driven way.
Yeah,
and I'm totally
yeah.
fine with.
The funny thing is, it's like, I love exactly the same things that you love. I love those little details, and I do feel like Campion knows exactly what she wants in those moments, but I don't trust her instincts with the story as a whole, what Linda was saying about the pacing issues, that mm-hmm. I just don't trust her to tie it all up. And the other thing that I was thinking about, and maybe somebody with more cinematographical experience than me can explain this, I started almost thinking of it as a drinking game, which is my go-to metaphor for dealing with anything repetitive. Why? And I wanted to take a sip every time I saw Elizabeth Moss's character framed in a window or a doorway. Mm-hmm. What was up with that? It was so repetitive. It got distracting. Please tell me.
I don't.
Oh, I'm sure she has a reason.
There isn't an answer. I mean, like you have an answer. I have an answer. That's kind of the deal.
I'm
that's
sure
kind
she
of the
has.
Point.
I'm sure she has her reasons. Okay. But no. I mean, I think any time that you start to notice something like that, there's an argument that they're doing it too much. Anytime that you notice it so much, mm-hmm. that it takes you out of the story. You know, I think for me, one of the things I like about this piece too is if you look at how many women are in this show, and yet there's no ingenue, there's sort of no hottie. You know, there's no one who presents that way, mm-hmm. really. Can you think of one?
Well,
there's no female hottie. No, I don't know if there's a dude hottie.
There's a male hottie. There's like the guy in the boat neck collar. That dude.
Oh, yeah. There's tattoo convict boy.
Yeah, right.
Well, but I'm just saying, to have a show that is one of the things that I like about it is it is a story with lots of women in it, none of whom are the women who are mostly on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that.
And this is why I say it's great that it's Jane Campion. All of those women are shown very distinctly and repeatedly mm-hmm. expressing their own sexual agency.
Right. You know, I noticed that too.
Bunny walks into the bar with a $100 bill, you know? Mm-hmm. And right. I thought, that's great. I want to see that on television.
Yeah. Well, and that Holly Hunter character is
a Mary Sue Major League?
She's unusual. Yeah. She is a little Mary. I did notice that, too.
Explain to people what Mary Sue is.
It's a term that originated in fan fiction, Star Trek fan fiction. I can't believe I know that, where the author creates a character that is so obviously an avatar of themselves, who is so wonderful and perfect that she bends the story around her.
Mm-hmm. You're just saying that because she has the same hair as Jane Campion.
I was going to say that, too.
That being said, I would watch a separate show all about those women in the shipping containers, because the dark humor, the dryness mm-hmm. of that humor in those scenes, I laughed my butt off.
And I just want to live in a shipping container on that lake. I mean, I would last a day.
People do that now, you know.
A day.
People live in shipping containers.
I would die of exposure on day two, but it'd be great.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me how much, as you were saying, Glenn, the sense of place recalls Twin Peaks, given that Twin Peaks was so specifically about the Pacific Northwest, and mm-hmm. this is so specifically New Zealand, which is, you know, a completely different part of the world,
right.
And yet the sense of place really is similar, not just because of the oddity of the locals, but because of the way that water is shot and, you know, sort of mm-hmm. green, hilly, I don't know, areas with cabins are shot and stuff like that. It really does have a very Twin Peaksy feel.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. You know, I think the other thing I wanted to ask you guys more generally is this a step, you know, potentially this kind of thing a step in going to sort of more limited series, because they're really billing it as a miniseries, although it's longer than some things that they bill as the first season of a continuing series. So I guess I would ask you, Petra, if you knew for sure, and I guess they haven't made this as a blood promise, but if you knew for sure that it was not going to have any more seasons, that it was absolutely ending at the end of the miniseries, which is my understanding of what they're doing, would it make you feel any better about your concerns about tying the plot up? Or I guess to ask it differently, would you feel even worse if you knew that they wanted to have lots and lots of seasons of it?
No, I would actually. I mean, as much as I like that kind of British TV model of much more shortened seasons with sort of richer, deeper installments, no, it makes me feel worse. I would want more seasons. I would probably watch it more if that were the case.
That's interesting. How about you, Jess?
So I feel like this show is going at a pace that I am only in it still because it's 7 episodes. Like, I know mm-hmm. it will conclude. I need a little more Law and Order tossed into this thing. But knowing it's 7 episodes, I can stick with it. And that's not to say I'm not enjoying myself. It's just if I stack it up next to the other things I watch, it is very unlike the entertainment I watch. I don't know. I am entertained, but I'm thinking too much mm-hmm. during the course of this show. Like, I feel like I'm a detective and I'm working really hard to piece it together. And so I'm into the 7 episodes conclusion.
How about you, buddy?
Done in one, man. I just love this idea of being so circumscribed. And I just don't. These questions you guys are asking are perfectly valid questions, but they just don't even occur to me. This show does not feel slow to me at all. The killing felt like a slog. This things happen. They're weird things. They don't necessarily
Well,
connect.
No, I'm just curious. I was asking because Petra had specifically raised these concerns about trust and pacing and whether anything would be resolved. And so I was curious about whether the miniseries model would cut in some direction or another.
Yep.
But I think it's safe to say, you know, we all have found it to be at least interesting in various ways. Glenn is super duper into it.
Yep.
I think the rest of us are slightly more mixed, with perhaps Petra the most mixed of all.
I am enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And I love Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm so excited because Mad Men's coming back. I don't know, to watch these in tandem. I'm excited.
Yeah. Good for her. She needs to do something besides Excedrin commercials. Good for her. All right. Well, let us know on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH how you feel about Top of the Lake, which, again, is on Sundance. You might not even know if you have the Sundance channel, but you probably do if you have a good extensive cable lineup. You might have it on demand. You know, you never know. So look for it. Check it out. I definitely thought it was interesting. Speaking of interesting, every now and then we like to return to one of our evergreens, as we would call them, one of our topics that we just like to kick around, and one that we did a while ago, famous, I should say, for its discussion of college a cappella. Don't make that noise.
Didn't make a noise.
Pitch Perfect came out, and now the world is with me. So
I'm jealous because I couldn't get into my college a cappella group. I was in the Madrigals, which was for losers.
That's right. So Petra is with me, which means we are 50-50. This is a 50.
Because I am with Glenn, FYI.
This
I
is a. I knew you would be. This is a 50% pro college a cappella crowd.
Whatever.
Right
now is the
here.
Month of May, and y'all.
Now is. Oh, hey, I sang that in high school. Believe me, I've done plenty of Madrigals. Petra and I are just going to talk about this
Good.
For a while.
No, that's great.
I'm going to tell her all the things we've talked about. But famous for that was a sequence that we called Pop Culture Punching Bags. And Barry was actually there for this discussion because I remember she brought up The Real Housewives. Mm-hmm. But we are going to talk about some things in pop culture that take a vicious, brutal beating that we would like to stick up for our poor punching bags. So Petra Mayer. You came prepared.
I did.
Pop culture punching bag.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not sure if this has been a little bit done, but I feel like it could be revisited. After Davy Jones died last year and broke my heart, I got both season box sets of The Monkees on DVD, and I started rewatching the show. It was one of my first major fandoms. I do at this moment own a cat named Peter Thorkelson Esquire.
He's orange,
which was Pete's favorite color.
Sure.
You are an actual Monkees
die hard.
Fan.
It was after Willie Nelson. They were the second concert I ever went to.
This is fascinating. You know, I saw Davy Jones at press tour one time.
I interviewed him once. He talked my ear off for an hour.
Yeah.
He was deeply strange, but I loved him.
Yeah.
My favorite Monkee was actually Peter, the sort of gentle hippie. And
you ended up at NPR.
I know. What makes me really excited, I found this out. I had a housemate who was heavily into feminist theory, and apparently, like, Peter Tork is in literature as an example of like an appropriate non-threatening crush object for teenage girls.
Wow.
Which, you know, makes
sense
for
like,
me.
That's why I loved
because
him.
I almost pursued a career in physics so that I could build a time machine and go back to the 60s and be the session bassist on the Headquarters album, which, as everyone knows, is the first album where they actually play their own instruments.
Of course.
This is fascinating. What's really funny is Petra is actually my second pal who is a big Monkees advocate. My pal Mark Hirsch is a big Monkees advocate and has actually written about the fact that The Monkees, I think he has a thing about The Monkees being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Right, because Jan Wenner has vowed to keep them out, supposedly, and everybody thinks that's super unfair. They've been eligible. They've been barred from the Hall of Fame for as long as they've been eligible.
I know two people who have a thing about The Monkees not being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, what I wanted to talk about, though, because I think people focus on the music, which is actually quite good if you go back and listen to it. It's very sort of country rock in a way that anticipated where the trends were going to go 5 years later, because Mike Nesmith was heavily into that. Before a lot of other people were. He wrote songs for Linda Ronstadt. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to talk about how good the TV show is, because I watched it, and I hadn't watched it since I was 13, and, you know, things that you like when you're 13 really don't stand up.
I'm not going to
talk about my love of Kathy Dennis and D-Mob at this point, you know? But I watched The Monkees, and I went, oh, my God, this is really good, apart from some uncomfortable racial humor and some weird, you know, Asian stereotyping, because I guess that was the thing. But you can really see sort of the debts that it had to Hard Day's Night and to the Marx Brothers, and the way it foreshadowed music videos. Mike Nesmith, of course, invented MTV.
Sure. Ahead of its time in pacing, certainly.
Yeah.
And in breaking the fourth wall.
Exactly. And the sort of the anarchic visual humor. There were so many sight gags that were just, you know, snap, snap, snap. They just blink and you miss them.
Right.
And so I just... It was really nice. It was really comforting to go back and find that this formative experience of my childhood, my first true fandom, had held up after all these years.
Yeah, I have nothing mean to say about the Monkees.
Yeah, I think it's been a while since that's been a punching bag. That's universally accepted.
Well, that's
right?
Why I said it's kind
oh,
of been
no.
done.
In this room,
but,
it is.
Yeah,
in, but,
no.
Well, I didn't like that song, Hey, Hey, for the Monkees.
Okay, nobody likes that. I hate that song.
But, okay, so that was, for me, that was like the only song I'd ever heard by the Monkees until I believe it was... Apple and some iPod commercial used Daydream Believer. I believe it was Apple. And then that was when I was like, oh, this is not bad. But, yeah, I think it was.
Haven't you ever seen the classic Brady Bunch episode?
Davey.
Where Davey comes and visits Marcia Brady?
I didn't have cable
Jess
as a youngster.
Bittner.
And so I was limited. I didn't have the
you
Nickelodeon.
Need cable to get the Brady Bunch. It's the opposite.
No, you did, because there were reruns.
Mm. You might as well be asking her if she likes penny candy. I mean, really.
I have no idea what that is, for the record.
Oh, goldfish swallowing.
What a licorice
raccoon coat.
Jelly baby. Anyway, so the reaction that I get when I tell people that I'm a Monkees fan in a serious way, like I still listen to the music, and I get a lot of funny looks. So I felt like it was probably inappropriate.
You're
it was still
absolutely.
Maybe not a heavy bag, but a speed bag.
No, of course.
You were in a safe place here, sister.
How many Monkees albums are there, incidentally?
Okay.
Roughly.
I have to count on my fingers.
No,
it's going to take me a minute.
Of course.
There's the debut. There's More of the Monkees. There's Headquarters, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones. The Birds, the Bees, and the Monkees. Head, which is the movie soundtrack. If you get a chance to see Head, by the way, it is the best rock and roll movie of all time. It is absolutely bonkers. It is one of the strangest cinematic experiences I've ever had. So there was that. And then there were three more albums that were made as various members were leaving the band, which are very uneven. So that's 10, I think. I just counted those off on my
wonderful.
Fingers.
I'm terribly impressed.
And a couple of comeback albums in the 80s and 90s that nobody cares about.
I am incredibly impressed. And I think that is a fine pop culture punching bag.
Thank you.
And like I said,
I feel safe and validated.
Yeah, you're not even the only person I know who thinks the Monkees need to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Jess Gittner, pop culture punching bag.
All right.
Other than Young Americans.
my pick is the controversial Kardashians.
Okay.
I am quite well versed in the Kardashian reality shows.
Kardashiana.
I've watched, I mean, I don't care about watching every episode, but I'm going to say if I see it on, I'm tuning in. I've even watched them on demand. And to let everyone know, unfortunately, Courtney and Kim Take Miami, the current season, is not on demand. I don't know why.
I laugh, but I watch Dance Moms.
So I've watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians, several seasons, Khloe and Lamar, and I've watched Courtney and Khloe Take Miami. I forget what the first one is, but now it's Courtney and Kim Take Miami. And the premise is they're there to fix up their store dash.
I'm going to say, does it need a premise?
Okay. There's some reason. Like, why are they there? Why the show is better than Keeping Up with the Kardashians, there's no Kris Jenner, who is the mom and sort of the most vile of the Kardashians. The most obvious and calculating. I know you'll say that everyone is, but they're not playing into the money game as much as you would think. At least the show portrays, and it's clear to the viewer, Kris Jenner, the mom, is just the puppet master. Also, there's no Rob Kardashian. But who I want to talk about really is Kourtney Kardashian, who is...
You have picked a punching bag.
Yeah,
I will say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Jess did not bring a small punching bag to the punching bag party.
Kourtney is, her partner, her boyfriend is Scott Disick, the lovable, sometimes moronic boyfriend. She's got two kids, and she is the voice of reason. To Kim, to the whole family. And, their voices may sound a certain way, but I wanted to play a clip of her calling Kim out, at least in the confessional, and giving her brother some advice.
Kim has always loved fashion and always loved clothes ever since we were little girls, and she's always worked really hard to buy whatever she wants. But I think lately, she's just going way above what she should be spending.
Don't you think those are kind of cool?
I do like those. I like that yellow shoe.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm not even, like, tripping.
You just need to, like, cut communication for a while. Rob is going on a rant about his breakup with his girlfriend, and it's getting so ugly. Instead of dealing with it privately, it's just becoming a public matter now. You need to literally put down the phone and go for a jog outside.
Sage wisdom.
Sage wisdom.
In the first clip, basically, the first clip was her talking about Kim's buying habits. Essentially, this episode was about Kim feeling all this pressure to have all these new clothes because of Kanye and, like, only caring about... I mean, she does very much care about how she looks, but it was even, like, hyperbole with the Kanye relationship. So here's Courtney being like, maybe they aren't good for each other. She is saying that. I think that's something. You know, I was like, that's hilarious. You know, they're writing that in the tabloids, too. But here it is on the same show. And then for the second clip, just to dial back, that was Rob Kardashian had tweeted all this terrible stuff about his ex-girlfriend and was just looking like a moron in the media. And, yeah, you should tone it down and keep it private. But I just thought that was it's surprising.
Just to have a Kardashian talking like a normal person.
Yeah, I mean, and given her voice could be not for everyone, but...
It's a nice way of saying that.
Yeah, Glenn, I know you might be in that camp, but she is a voice of reason, and I really appreciate that, like, realism on the show.
Mm-hmm. Realism on the show. Serious question here. We've talked about the Kardashians before, and the mistaken belief that everybody who watches the Kardashians sees it as aspirational, as like, oh, they have such a great life, I wish I was like that. When, in fact, I'm going to say most people watch it the way I suspect you watch it, which is, look at these freaks. Or are you somewhere in between?
I'm a little bit in between. Actually, I'm actually really into the sister relationship. They actually like spending time with each other. If they could have anything in the world, it would be to eat at nice restaurants, like live in big houses, and just like hang out together.
So you're into the family.
I'm into the family dynamics. All the other stuff, like the publicity stuff, you know, the sex tapes, whatever. I'm not...
Not so much for you.
The Rob's sock business. Like, I'm not... I'm not so into...
You're right from a sex tape to a sock business. It's just...
Because socks distinguish
people
wearing
suits. I think I knew of a sex
suits.
Tape once that was called sock
business. All right.
Why am I suddenly seeing images of old Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah, okay.
Showing my age over here.
But yeah, I'm into the family dynamic. That's what does it for... That's why I watch the... No, hold on.
That's sweet.
I'm into the family... I'm into the family dynamic, and I really do think, at times, it is a sweet show. Okay. And I stand behind that.
That is very brave.
No, that I mean, I have nothing. I've never.
That
watched.
Is sweet.
You know, I have to say, I do not watch any Kardashian shows, but I watch many terrible things. So, you know, I would have no right to cast aspersions, even if it was terrible. And I have no way of knowing if it's terrible, because I prejudge the Kardashians. I admit it. I prejudge without knowing.
And given there's totally contrived moments
well,
in
yes.
the show.
That's very common.
But that's fine. I mean, that's a given for reality.
Exactly. Contrived situations at the very least.
I'm with Linda on the prejudging, though. I have to. But then again, I watch Toddlers and Tiaras, which maybe I should have picked for my pop culture punching.
Well, but there's a difference between, like, well, I watch Dance Moms, but I would never defend Dance Moms. Like, I would never say Dance Moms is my pop culture punch, because it deserves to be.
That's true, actually. I can't defend Toddlers and
Tiaras.
I
beat up on it also. Dance Moms is only there to be beat up on. Right. It's only there as a punching bag. If it wasn't a punching bag, it would not be at all.
I see the promos for it, and it scares me.
Oh, yeah, it's very terrifying. It has everyone yelling at each other. But that's not what I picked, so I'm going to go to Glenn. And you can tell me, Glenn Weldon, what did you pick for your pop culture punching bag?
Okay, the 2012 film John Carter is not a debacle, is not a fiasco. That's actually a very good science fiction, epic, space opera movie. It's great. Not great. It's good. It's better than you've heard it is.
Uh-huh.
This film was directed by Andrew Stanton. It's his first live-action film after coming off of Finding Nemo. It cost $250 million to make. According to Hollywood accounting, for it to even break even, it would have needed to make $600 million worldwide. Anyone want to guess what it made, actually, worldwide?
Worldwide, it did okay, I thought.
$283 million.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not so
much. Did great. It broke records in Russia.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like being big in Japan.
Yeah, it's true.
Love that song.
So, Taylor Kitsch. Now, Linda, you and I have had words about our different opinions of Taylor Kitsch's attractiveness. And I don't want to go down that road. Got a little heated, if I recall. I don't think it happened on air, but I think...
No, it happened at a party.
Now I'm trying to get... I don't know where you would stand.
Well, if I may paraphrase your position, it was something along the lines of, oh, he's so dreamy, oh, Tim Riggins, ooh, he's so cute.
What if I said
such
dreamy?
A bad boy. Ooh.
I definitely didn't say that.
Ooh, he's so, his hair isn't at all disgusting and greasy.
You're confusing, Linda now with Linda when she was 22.
Okay. And my position was...
Oh, he's so miserable. He must be wonderful.
My position was A. Let's stipulate that the body is.
You basically said he's potato face.
I'm getting there. A, the body is above reproach. B, the hair is an issue, and C, that the pinched features is what I would say. So
you're only saying the hair is an issue because Steven's not here, so you feel free say that.
I would say that to his face. here's the issue: he's got a big old melon of a head, but not quite enough face to cover it. So it's a distribution issue, really.
Thank you for putting into words what I have been, like, secretly feeling all these months.
You are shallower than Kim Kardashian.
Believe it or not.
You've got a distribution issue.
If we put it all together, he's like
speaks wisdom.
A weirdly steroidal hippie ferret. That's what we got going there. But he's really good in this movie. It allows him to have a little sense of humor about himself. There's some really great big set pieces. It is admittedly weirdly paced, and if you look at the plot of this movie on Wikipedia or anything, and it's all like, and then the Tharks go to Wasum and blah, 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 the town of Helium, and you're like, the town of Helium? Really?
To the books!
But then, I know, it's all, and they actually do a pretty good job of adapting the books. They do update the sexual politics. Because
I was going
to
say,
really,
since when has Jeja Thoris had a science academy?
Exactly. So it doesn't...
That was an inside...
This is Glenn and Patrick. Like, am I right?
Linda and I are giving the side eye to each other.
Sorry, I'll shut up now.
No. This is one of the reasons we wanted to invite you, is to give Glenn a friend.
Exactly. You hear me. You get me. So, it's a straight-ahead, pulpy genre exercise. Give it a shot. It's good.
You are mean to Taylor Kitsch. I do not approve of this.
Well,
I'm Glenn's friend in this issue.
He's not a potato face. You are mean. You think he's a potato face. Speaking of potato faces. Sort of. My pop culture punching bag has been in the news recently. Dear to me as an adolescent. Very important in my growth as a consumer of pop entertainment. My pop culture punching bag, Billy Joel.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. A regular crowd shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin. Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job, got a good office. I got a new wife, got a new life, and the family's fine. Oh, lost touch long ago. You lost weight, I did not know. You really ever looked so nice after so much time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Suck it, haters.
Hey, I love Billy Joel.
Suck it, haters. Mm. Like you. This was when I was, like, middle school age. And I was sort of first starting to like music that I didn't get from my parents and stuff like that. This was one of the first things that I really loved. And it was because I was into singer-songwriters as a teenager. That was kind of my thing, logically enough. You know, people who told story songs and played the piano. I liked the piano. People who played the piano. I mean, I don't have a specific reason as much as I can just say, to me, this is like the pop music of my youth. Mm-hmm. And at some point, people decided that it was like the uncoolest thing in the entire world to be pro Billy Joel. Now, it was somewhere around the time he started driving into things, I will say. But
well, also, but, we didn't start the. I feel like
That's not my favorite.
Yeah.
Somewhere around that time, I was paying a little less attention.
Yeah.
But I think there's plenty of stuff there in that. If you go back and listen to like the actual. The time when he became greatly respected and a great musician and sold a ton of records, that's all still, to me, really good music. I still really enjoy it. And I am every single time that somebody is like, oh, Billy Joel, I think a little tiny bit less of that person.
What would Thompson say if he were here? Where does he come down on this?
I have no idea. We've never talked about it.
Aha.
Do you have a favorite Billy Joel song? Because I do.
I have a favorite Billy Joel song. I like Vienna. I like Summer Highland Falls. I like lots. Do you?
I'm really into Scenes from an Italian
Restaurant. Oh, yes, yeah, of course.
I don't know from Billy Joel. So who has the deeper cut here between the two of you?
None of them are hits. None of the ones that we have just mentioned are hits.
Yeah. I have no idea if they're hits because I listen to them after.
None of them are kind of the most well-known, but they're all ones that, if you talk to people who like him, are not uncommon to be favorites.
Petra, you're awfully quiet.
I am quiet, and it's because I have a really weird reaction to Billy Joel that is not rational. So there's this phenomenon called Sauce Bernaise syndrome, which is that if you eat a particular food and then get sick, then ever after you will associate that food with illness. And so I used to love Uptown Girl.
Oh, boy.
And
well,
I listened to it a lot.
That doesn't count.
But still.
I'm not.
I loved that song because I was into oldies and doo-wop and that whole sound, which... And I remember it being on a Sunday morning when I had an upset stomach and I was a kid, you know. So forever after, that song brings back to me the sensation of hurling my pancakes. And so I can't be neutral about Billy Joel because he reminds me of that terrible Sunday morning.
You're really holding a lot of things against him.
He reminds me of that terrible Sunday morning, and I never had that terrible Sunday morning.
I'm not concerned about you.
That being said, I'm more of a jangly Britpop nerd.
There you go. That's perfectly...
You know, it wasn't my sound.
Perfectly valid. The reason, incidentally, that I mentioned that he was in the news is that if you have not seen it, there's a lovely clip floating around of something he's actually done at a variety of talks. He gives talks like at college and music schools and stuff like that. And he was giving a talk and a guy asked to play piano with him for him. So the kid came up and played the piano and played New York State of Mind and he sang. And it was this sort of like, you know, one of those videos of someone coming up out of the audience and... how you feel about that phenomenon is up to the individual, but it is a lovely clip, and that's been getting a lot of attention.
I always wish it were me.
So that's my punching bag. And I will defend him. And anyone who wants to come yell at me about Billy Joel, you can come and find us on Facebook or at the blog and yell at me about Billy Joel. But I will not be moved. Will not. It will not happen. I will not be moved.
She's waving a banner over there. And
that's
right. There's a little barricade of office chairs. And,
I wave my finger in your face for Billy Joel. Anyway, so that brings us to our final segment. What is making us happy this week? Jess Gittner, I'm going to start with you. What is making you happy this week?
A video that the band who have broken up, they've announced their breakup maybe a year ago, a video for Rilo Kiley's song, Let Me Back In.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a new video. They didn't shoot the video, but they compiled a bunch of old VHS footage almost from their younger days. They were coming up in the 90s, and for people in their, I'd say, 20s to 40s, it may have been the first band they loved. They're from L.A. The song, to many fans, maybe known to them as I Love L.A., and I want to play a little clip.
Let it be printed, let it be known, I'm leaving. I'm going home, and all you can do is just watch me go.
All right, so bittersweet. You know, this, they wrote the song many, many years ago, but it's being officially released on an album called Archives. That's the letter R plus K-I-V-E-S, which is out April 2nd. And it's really bittersweet because it is a song about saying goodbye, and it brought a tear to my eye to see these band members from so long ago having fun backstage in the van playing music, to hear these words of, you know, saying goodbye. So if you like Rilo Kiley, check out the video. But you can hear a bunch of unreleased tracks and old rarities on the Archives album, which is out soon.
Excellent. Petra Mayer, what is making you happy this week?
It's something that I've started to sort of think of as a harmonious conjunction of TV. I'm not the world's hugest TV watcher, but there are a few shows that I'm very passionate about, and for a few golden brief weeks starting this Saturday, they will all overlap. RuPaul's Drag Race.
Sure.
Doctor Who.
Yep.
Game of Thrones.
I am in.
Yes, Lord.
Awful. You are three for three, young lady.
Somebody needs to, like, we need to talk about RuPaul and how amazing that show is.
We will.
We will.
Someday.
So that's what's making me happy. That'll carry me through till June when True Blood comes back.
Okay, there we part ways.
No, there we part ways. I can't defend True Blood. I know it's schlock.
Okay.
But it is.
You just lost Glenn. He was so hopeful.
It's eye candy. Come on.
God hates fangs.
Whoa. Speaking of, weren't we talking about Heavy-Handed earlier?
We were.
Maybe Jane Campion needs to make a vampire movie.
That'd be great. All right, Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I went up to see two things very briefly. I went up to see It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, the revival of a 1966 Superman musical up at Encores at City Center this last weekend. It was a very, very short run, only like, I think, 7 performances total, and it was great. I reviewed it at glennweldon.tumblr.com, which is going to become a visual companion to the book Superman, the Unauthorized Biography, over the next couple weeks.
Which, incidentally, I have to say... Yeah. Superman, the Unauthorized Biography, I don't know where else it is, but you can already get it as of today on your Kindle, in the Kindle store, because I bought it.
Thank you. You're a nice person.
I bought it.
You're a nice person.
I bought the Kindle edition and I have it. So that I could look up and see, tell Glenn whether there had been a copy editing problem or not is the actual original reason why I got
it. And of course there had been. So, but the main thing I want to talk about is... A while ago on this show, we were talking about fantasy novels, and I said something to the effect that I want to read the fantasy novel that's about the person who gets chosen.
Yes.
He's the chosen one.
Yes.
And he alone can defeat the evil of Lord Granflax the Befouler or whatever. And we find out about one-third of the way into the novel that, oh, yeah, you're not the chosen one. Go home.
Mm-hmm.
And then he or she has to go home and just kind of hang.
Mm-hmm. So it's like The Life of Brian.
It is like that, except this book has now been written by D.C. Pearson, who has been making the podcast rounds. He's an actor and comedian. He was in the comedy troupe called Derek. They made a very funny film called Mystery Team. The name of the book is Crap Kingdom. It's his second novel, his first YA novel, and it is a lot of fun. It's about a boy who gets called, transported to another realm to defend it against the evil, but it turns out that this realm that he's transported to is not really remotely magical or fantastic. In fact, it's kind of shabby and depressing, and he begs off. And then things happen from there. The thing that I really love about this book is he's got the comedian's ear for dialogue. So his dialogue has a hardwired comedic timing. It's not I'm not talking about jokes like set up punchline.
Right.
I'm talking about the rhythms of the speech are funny and the back and forth between the characters. So it's very naturalistic, very funny, very well done. So fantasy with a sense of humor is a good thing because, as Petra will stipulate, you know, you get a lot of bad puns. In fantasy.
Dear Lord. And Piers Anthony has a lot to answer for.
Oh, boy.
By the way, do you have this book and can I borrow it? It sounds fantastic.
I have it on Kindle.
So, oh, you bum.
Sorry. But it is great. So outside of Terry Pratchett, it's kind of hard to find humor in fantasy. So look for this book. Pick it up. It's a quick read, but it's very good. Crap Kingdom by D.C. Pearson.
Wonderful. I do not have any one big thing making me happy this week, so I decided to go with a list.
There we go.
of short things, small things. The first one of which is that I raved on this podcast a while ago about a book called Eleanor and Park, which is by Rainbow Rowell. It's being marketed and sold as a YA novel. When I read it, even though it's about teenagers, I didn't realize they thought it was a YA novel. I just thought it was a lovely novel about teenagers for anyone. It is out now. It recently received a rave review in the New York Times from John Green, who wrote The Fault in Our Stars.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I want to just once again mention Eleanor and Park one more time if you don't follow me on Twitter and therefore haven't heard me say that a billion times. Also, today was the first time I spent significant time in my car listening to, not to be a homer, but the newish NPR show Ask Me Another, which is their new puzzle game show. Jonathan Colton is on it. It's just tons and tons of fun. I liked it a lot. I went to one of the pilot tapings long ago. They've really sort of got that off at a very nice pace now. They've found, I think, the right level for the puzzles to be not too hard and not too easy. I was yelling out answers in the car, which is how you know the puzzle show is working on you. So I enjoyed that. I would also mention Joe Reed's ranking in Vulture of all of the seasons of The Real World, which is a heroic piece of cultural anthropology.
Absolutely.
Joe has watched, and therefore can rank, all its 11 billion now right. seasons of The Real World.
Wow.
He did it on Vulture. It's a slideshow. It's fantastic. You should read it.
It's the one slideshow you should read.
And then my final thing would be the fun that I have had in this NCAA tournament so far. And it's possible that by the time you hear this podcast, this will be a thing of the past. In fact, it pretty much will be. But the Florida Gulf Coast University Eagles, who first
they
beat
killed me.
Georgetown. Georgetown is just a school. I apologize.
I woke up at 6:30 on Friday to watch the game. This is, I had slept, 8 hours. I work overnight. Mm-hmm. And I crawled back in.
See, now Glenn and I are side-eyeing you guys.
Right. I'm sorry, Jess.
I haven't watched a single game since.
But it was really fun. Florida Gulf Coast University, 15th seed, right? There's to explain. You got the four brackets, 16 teams each. And the four regions with 16 teams each. So the 15 seed not only won their first game, but then they won their second game. So it is the first time that a 15th-seeded team has ever made it into the Sweet 16 past their first two games. And I was thrilled for them. And they are super fun to watch. They are high-flying. They
do alley-oops. They just throw the ball in the air and someone flies out of nowhere to put it in. So.
Yeah, there was a great line from, I think it was Mark Lasanti, who's a writer at Grantland now, who said, he's also a Georgetown fan and was very crushed by this loss and later said, I went to my refrigerator to get myself a drink.
Yeah,
but
that was
when
a good
I opened
one.
The refrigerator door, a guy from Florida Gulf Coast University just jumped in out of nowhere and took my drink before I could get it. It was funny. In context, it was funny.
I know not this language you're
speaking.
Do you know what an alley-oop is?
I don't.
Aww. It's a good song.
I can figure it out from context.
You know, alley and then oop. The point being, I've had great fun watching them. So that's my little collection of mini making me happy. Not one grand one, but four mini making me happy. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Glenn at GHWeldon, WELDON. Petra, I know we can follow you at NPR Books. Can we also follow you personally?
Yes, I am Petromatic.
Petromatic. PETRAMATIC.
Yes.
Petra Mayer. You can also follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, GITNER. You can follow our absent friends, Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. See you soon, buddy. You can also follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow our esteemed producer, Emeritus, and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are listening to right now. So thanks so much to you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.